Okay, we're ready? Okay.
Awesome.
All right, guys. I'm so excited to have you here together as part of the CP Salon series, and our salon today being outside in Austin, Texas. And this series aims to pair people together who are in wildly disparate positions. Jobs that are seemingly at the opposite ends of a spectrum. And so here with us we have Cecilia. And Cecilia, you're head of brand marketing at Google here in Austin. And then we have Chef Fermin. Do I need to call you Chef throughout this? Or
You can call me Fermin. You can call me Chef. Whatever you want.
do I have to say Fermin? I like that better. Chef Fermin, who, Fermin, you are the owner of two of arguably the best Mexican restaurants in the United States right now, Suerte and say Suerte,
Suerte.
Suerte, and Este, and also Bartoti,
Yeah.
and they're based here in Austin. And so, what we're going to try and do today is I want to get to the crux of something that I hear about so much in my DMs. And it might sound strange that I hear about this in my DMs, right? I'm the founder and creative director of a clothing line. But what I hear about from a lot of people, I mean, thousands of DMs at this point, are that people find themselves trapped in their career. And it's either that they're young and they feel like they've already been siloed into their career of choice, that college and even maybe high school and family expectations have put them on a singular path. And I hear from a lot of people who are not just young people. I mean, like people across all the monikers from Gen Z to Gen X, even baby boomers, that they are on a path that is very locked in for them. It's a path that they've grown sequentially and they feel very locked in. And they feel that if they do everything right and pick up the right skills and learn the right information, that that is what is going to propel them further down their path or up their corporate ladder, that that's how they'll find corporate success. And what happens, though, is often for them, that path, that ladder, it turns into a tunnel. And it's a tunnel that seems to have no detours, like only exits that require you to go back to square one, start at the very beginning if you want to change direction. And I use a tunnel analogy because it really describes how many people feel like they are locked in, either with tunnel vision or that they feel like things are really closing in on them. And what we aim to do here is to drill down to the common denominators of what makes people successful in their jobs, in their chosen industries, and see that, first of all, there's tremendous overlap in what both of you do. And for me and Cecilia, you guys, I mean, it could not be more opposite on the surface, your careers. But I find that, like, if we were to, at the end of this, put your common denominators, put your even daily job descriptions into Google AI and ask, what do I do for a living? I think AI would be fooled. I think it could spit out a lot of different answers. So even when people believe they are building the specific experiences and skills to lead them down the path they've chosen or up the ladder, they're actually acquiring a base of know-how and expertise that can be applied to so many other worlds, so many other paths to take. And so with that in mind, to tee this up, like Cecilia, tell me, not your elevator pitch, but if I were in the elevator and I was like, what do you do for Google? What would you say?
I think the first thing I would say is storytelling. Like I work in brand marketing and there's a lot of pieces about that, right? It can be very metrics driven and quantitative, but at the end of the day, really, I see my job is to tell stories about Google, to tell stories about people who use our products. And when I look at my career, it's always been some sense of storytelling. Like that's really what we're me through digital content, because that's really what I'm creating. But at each kind of point in my career, storytelling is the my has been center to what I do. And I think unlocking and connecting people with stories is really how I would talk about my job now.
Interesting. Same elevator.
Same elevator.
Same elevator.
Fun elevator.
We're all in.
It's really fun.
Where are we going? I get to be the chef of a few restaurants here in Austin. The first one is Suerte. We focus on doing things with masa, you know, growing from corn that is grown here in Texas, cooking every tortilla to order by hand, served from the first time it was cooked. And we have a restaurant called Este, which we focus on the same principles of masa and Mexican cooking techniques, but we focus a little bit more on seafood, and Bartotti, which has a little bit more emphasis on Spanish and bar culture. But I get to be the chef, and that kind of changes with the years, with the days. And the way I describe my role now is I do whatever the restaurants need me to do on a daily, on a weekly, on a yearly basis. And sometimes that is stepping on the line and actually cooking, which actually is the most fun thing I get to do every day now. Sometimes that means being a little bit of a therapist for people. Sometimes that means being a leader. So it's a lot of different roles that I do, but ultimately it's being the chef of the restaurant that is leading the people in the right direction of where we want to go.
And when you wake up in the morning, how sure are you of what you're going to be doing that day? And when you go to bed at night, did you do what you thought you were going to do that day, or did wild turns happen?
Now I can say never. Now, I always used to get mad at myself, like, I had this list and I didn't accomplish anything. And the moment I realized that, like, the list is only a guideline of things that I want to do, but what's more important is that I accomplished what the restaurant needed me to do. That's a better feeling going to bed than I didn't get to do the things that I wanted to do that I thought I needed to do. So that's...
And so, Cecilia, for you being in a large organization... Do you feel like you get that freedom, or do you get to approach things with that freedom to at least kind of push and give friction on the edges to be successful?
I feel the freedom. I definitely feel the freedom of resource, which, you know, we were just talking before we started. It's, you know, we have an opportunity. We want to lean in. Let's bring in a lot of different creative ideas. Like, how many different ideas can we get? But I also think with large organizations comes complexity, and being able to kind of show up in a way, it's kind of what you're saying for me every day, is whether you're going to be the therapist that day or whether you're going to be jumping in and helping to build the slides, tell the story. You know, who knows what it is, but it is kind of, it's a different experience every single day to get to whatever story you're telling or whatever kind of creative output that we're working towards. So I would say that resource is helpful, but with resource and people come complexity.
Yep, for sure. And so, I mean, to that end, like, for me and you, you have to be great at what you do. But great is relative and great is different depending on where you are. And one question I really like asking people in these interviews is, in mine, like, are there certain skill sets that have come together to make you who you are and very successful in what you do today?
I think for me, I mean, obviously there's the skills parts of, like, knowing how to work in a kitchen, right? Like, those things are the things that you can't really skip. And not just as a chef, but, like, in any career that you have to be good at the technical part, right? Like, as a lawyer, like you said, like, you have to know the law to be able to walk into court and how to walk in into those scenarios where you have to understand what you're walking into, right? So those are the things that I think the skills that I've gained through my career of putting my head down and learning the skills part of it. It's something that I've been lucky enough to hone in through the years. But I think the biggest part that I've learned throughout the years that I have, in your words, like, made me great was when I started being a leader in kitchens and being the last person in command, I was also very nervous that I didn't know everything. And the moment I felt like I became a greater chef, a better leader, was the moment I realized that I don't have to know everything, and that it's okay to show people that I'm learning with them at the same time they're learning, and that it's okay to not know everything. That was the biggest thing for me that showed me how to be a good leader. And that opened the doors for me to, like, just explode my potential on how to become great. Because that just, like, opened the door for me to, like, oh, I don't have to know everything. That's okay. And people react to that in a way that they see their person they're following also be a human. And they want to follow that human.
So when you say that you realize that you didn't have to know everything, like growing up, did you grow up in an atmosphere that really encouraged that kind of self-reflection or that ability to just kind of roll with it? And so when you realized that you didn't have to know everything, it was more of a relief? Or was that something that you had to like forcibly practice doing? Like, were you with the one that always...
I had to like practice that myself. Mm-hmm. I didn't grow up with that, like, oh, it's okay if you don't know these things, you know. I think also like in cooking and in kitchens, it's like it's a sense of pride knowing everything. It's a sense of pride of walking in the kitchen with your apron, like, I know how to butcher that fish, even though you've never seen that. I know how to butcher that rabbit. Yeah. And sometimes you don't have the opportunity if you never worked with a rabbit, with a certain fish, right? So that's where that insecurity came from, of not knowing everything. And when I was able to get rid of that, I was like, why would I know how to butcher an alligator if I've never butchered an alligator? Right? Like, why would you expect me to know how to do this if I've never gotten a chance to be around an alligator? I didn't grow up in New Orleans. Right?
And how bad it is when you fail at something that you pretended to know, when really that's authenticity is just owning it.
And I definitely did those mistakes where I pretended to like know how to butcher the alligator, right? This is a metaphor, right? And that's when I realized that, like, who am I? I'm lying to myself, and this is not a good example for the people that are looking at me trying to get to where I am. That is not the person I want them to look up to. So I just switched that, and I brought the alligators, like, let's learn how to butcher an alligator together.
I love that.
So, Cecilia, same question for you. What are, like, the weird attributes that would never be on a job requirement or anyone's, like, LinkedIn profile of the things that made them who they are or that are required?
Yeah, I think, well, kind of thinking about what you just said there, I think not knowing is such a, it does feel like, especially when you're younger in a career, such a point of vulnerability, right? Like, it just feels, it almost feels exposing. But one of the things that I have learned and that I think I have really honed in my career is understanding how to occupy your role in a room. Like, when I'm in a room with designers and copywriters and art directors and, you know, all different folks, and I'm the marketer, how I approach the work, how I approach the vision is very different than where they do. So relying on those people to bring their skill sets and really understanding what value you bring, which I think comes with, you know, learning your skill sets, learning what you're good at, and comes with just a sense of confidence over time is really important. It's almost the same as that I don't know, but it's just, I'm going to let someone else speak to this.
Yeah.
I don't have to have the answer because I trust my teammate over here and I know their answer will be spot on.
For you, was there any particular thing that happened in your life that gave you experience there, or was an attribute of you that you didn't realize was, you know, like, were you the hustler in school? Were you the comedian, the class clown? Were you the one who
I would have liked to have been a class clown? You know, I think where I feel like I am often...
just real quickly. Yeah. You just said you would have liked to have been the class clown. And so what I would say to that alone is that I would imagine that means that you really do respect what you see as creativity or humor.
100%.
And you're also open to acknowledging that you want more of that and you would have loved to have been that. And that's, those are some of the things that stymie people right away. Number one, they may not respect the class clown. That might have been a really annoying person for them. Or they may not be big enough... Maybe it's too embarrassing to admit that you don't really have it and you want to go learn the joke or whatever, but you don't really have the, you're not self-deprecating enough to say, I don't have it and I wish I did.
Yes.
And I would imagine that being in a room of creatives, you understanding that about yourself and you're willing to listen to them puts you in a really unique space.
Yeah, it does. And I think, You know, I probably have had moments in my career where I've gotten heavy-handed on something that's not my core skill set, and then it comes back and you're like, whoa, I just spent up a bunch of people for a whole week on this thing, and now it looks worse than it did.
Yeah.
And that's a really hard, that's a hard thing to, like, come to grips with. And I think it's watching that over time and realizing what kind of feedback I give that really makes work better, that really makes things, you know, move forward, that are definitely learning experiences that I've had.
Because that humility is key, and I would imagine for me and for you, like, it is about honing that skill set so that you can be the one that if you're working with someone, you're like, no, there is the expert way of doing something, but then you want to be expert enough that you can really fuck with it.
Yeah.
You know, and it's hard to fuck with things because there's the 3-year-old that can paint the masterpiece, and then there's like the 25-year-old or whatever with lots of practice and art school and all that, or like just through repetition and a unique point of view that can paint the masterpiece. Mm-hmm. But those.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Interesting. So Fermin, do you have a set of principles that you really govern your life by? And I'm really curious if those principles are the same at work as they are to what you apply to your personal life.
I don't know that I have, like, principles that I, like, have written down, but I have, like, just ways that I like to live my life that both of those things kind of, like, go between work and personal life. I like to... Now that I'm in a place where I try to pursue balance between work and life, which was not the case when I started my professional career, I like to pursue balance, personal balance, and taking care of myself, putting myself first, to make sure that if I am in a good place, I can bring the best version of myself to the kitchen, to the restaurants. And that's important because to me it's like an ecosystem where everything works.
Yep.
If I'm putting myself first, which at first it was really hard for me to do that because I went through the phase where I was always Chef Fermin.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got lost because I didn't know who Fermin was. And it was hard for me to get out of that circle. And when I was only Chef Fermin, I was great, but I was good, but I wasn't great because I was only that every single time. And you can only be good at something up until a certain point.
Yep.
If you work 80 to 100 hours a week, like, you're only going to be good up until like hour 50.
Yep.
After that, you're just like grumpy and mad.
Yep.
And like, you think you're good, but you're not.
So one thing that we do is, I always ask people to really, like, dial back to core adjectives that they would use to describe themselves. And I think for me, where we started off, and you were talking about the ability to just say, you know what, I don't know how to carve apart this alligator. And again, like, for any alligator lovers out there, we are just using this as the alligator is a metaphor here. But like, would you say that being honest is a really core principle?
Absolutely.
Of yours? Because I think that when we talk about, like, really knowing the way to describe yourself in a way that, like, it's one that you would almost be kind of embarrassed to tell people because they may, like, be like, bullshit, man, I saw you say that last week, you know, like, you're not. But, like, really, like, that kind of honesty is so important to you. So it makes sense that, like, coming to grips with being authentic in the kitchen, that, like, you know what, I can't slay this alligator, would become very important. And being able to lean into just little things like that right now are becoming, like, real career definers for people. Mm-hmm. Like, that alone is something beautiful when you think about all the scripted chef shows out there.
Honestly, and that's, like, integrity, right? It's like, who do I want to be? Who do I want to be in and out of the kitchen? Because that is, like, that line can be blurred,
yep.
But it leads into the person that I want to be, right? And also, I can tell you who I want to be, but only you can tell me who I am through the actions that I show you. And to me, integrity is like doing the right thing even when no one's looking.
Yeah.
That to me is like a perfect example of the person I want to be in the way I want to live my life.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't like always think about that every day, but that's like every day you're faced with those little decisions, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do I stop at the stop sign? Do I pick up this trash? Right? Do I do the right? You're always faced with decisions in your personal and your work life. So it's like, how honest do you want to be with yourself? And like, sometimes you don't do the right thing, sometimes you do. And like, it's all about that balance. And that's the way I want to live my life. And to me, those things kind of like always blend together.
Yeah.
But it took me a long time to get to this point.
Well, it's getting also to the point where you just said, like, doing the right thing or doing the honest thing, even when no one's looking. But we're in a world right now where
everyone.
Like, how do you keep doing the thing that you know is right, even when the clicks and the algorithm is telling you something totally different?
Honest and integrity.
Yeah.
And you're the only one that can judge yourself for that.
So for you, Cecilia, what are the key principles that you have that guide you with what you do?
Yeah, I think this is something I've definitely been kind of in a journey and process on in the last few years. And I think similarly, showing up as my full self and my full present self feels really important. Mm-hmm. Like, I think I probably lived a pace early in my career where I was like, my brain was half there the whole time, right? Because I was in 100 places. And so being able to embody true presence in like every place that I'm showing up in my career and with my family and all of those pieces is something that is like a huge value for me right now. And so I think my principles are reflective of that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's almost like some of the baseline things. Like, I know I need to connect with someone every single day. Like, I need to have good connection points with my team, with my family. Things like being creative every day. Like, that's been, you know, my Tibby journey specifically gives me a chance. I wake up in the morning and, speaking to occupying roles, I'm the creative director of how I'm showing up that day.
Yeah.
And I love to occupy that role every day. And that makes me feel more of who I am. It gives me a sense of presence in my day.
Yeah.
Sleep is a same one, but it's like very important to me in terms of being able to like to give the feedback I want to give and
have
to
a clear head.
Have a clear head and show up for the work in the way that I want to. So those are a lot of the big ones.
I think that's important because, like, for me, and you're obviously in a position where your principles, these are your companies. You can drive them based on your principles. You, however, you know, it's really figuring out, like, what...
Service plus right there.
I love this. I love figuring out, helping people figure out to really drill down on their principles, because a lot of people leave big companies because they feel like it's not aligned with their principles or they're very unsatisfied in their jobs because it's not aligned with their principles. Mm-hmm. But I often find that people don't understand at the core what their real principles are. They don't have a list in which to constantly benchmark against. You know, you've really got to have those first principles. And so, you know, everything that you mentioned, I would say at Google, I would imagine you could live out against those principles and not feel compromised with that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's part of what I'm, you know, looking for in a job and a creative outlet on a regular basis, is places where I can live my full creative self to my full potential. And
so for you, for me, and I would think too, like a lot of people, when we're small, you know, small businesses, we are independent owners, right? I would think that, well, I know I hear this a lot, that people, if they're not blaming a big company, they're blaming an entire industry for not allowing them to do something. They'll come to me and they'll say, the fashion industry doesn't align with my principles. They might think that the restaurant industry doesn't align. You know, there's the whole show with what was the name of it, Chef, with the guy with the food truck?
The bear.
Oh, no, the no, one with the food truck, right? Yeah. And he ended by, like, he blew up because he had to serve the chocolate molten cake, mm-hmm. right? And he felt like the whole industry was conspiring against his principles. So it's like, do something. You can't let these things weigh on you. Do something.
Totally.
Yeah. The world is not perfect, and we get one chance to make an impact on it, and we get to choose how we get to do that, right? Mm-hmm. And that might not be for everybody, and that's okay. That's what I've learned too through this journey of having one restaurant, two and three. It's like, I gotta stand behind my decisions because I know some people are not gonna love them. And at first that was hard when some people didn't, right? And I was like, oh, am I making the wrong decision, right? Like mm-hmm. going from one to like having everybody involved to like having to make decisions that involved everybody. And some people didn't love those.
Yep.
I had to be 110% sure of the decision that I was making, that I believed in, and also understand that not everybody's gonna be aligned with everything that I have as my beliefs.
Yep.
So you have to be really strong in what you believe in and know that it is true to yourself. And yeah, some people might not think that it's the right thing to do, and that's okay.
I had asked on Instagram over the weekend, I had asked people to send to me their favorite speeches mm-hmm. of all time. And it was amazing. It was This Is Water from David Foster Wallace to, of course, MLK's I Have a Dream. And someone sent me a speech from Margaret Thatcher where it was all about the courage to be disliked and how you have to fundamentally understand that to not be disliked means that you really ultimately are not standing for anything. Mm-hmm. You have to, you know, to have an opinion is to know for certain that other people will have a contrarian opinion, and you've got to be good with that. Mm-hmm. How, I mean, at Google world, like you've got to navigate not only a consumer, but you've got to navigate internal issues where you get to control that for me internally, right? Like, but not the consumer ever, but like, how do you really go for things?
I think that is like, it's such a good point. And often when I think back to some of the skills that I'm bringing to the table, two things that are very core to me are, or that often feel in conflict to me, are my empathy and my ambition. Like I feel like I live in the tension of my empathy and ambition. And I think sometimes when you're true to your principles and you're really going after those ambitions, that's when you're having these moments where, you know, people don't agree with you, people don't like you, but I feel the emotional weight of every single person in the room when I'm making those decisions, which was a big realization when I know some people don't feel that way. But I do think that it helps. I do think it's an important part of, often I'm working with big teams, right? 50 and 60 people at a time working on one project. So of course, a large percentage of those folks aren't going to be always aligned.
Right.
But I do think having empathy can help bring them along
and
help them understand and kind of see the larger vision.
Yep.
And that sometimes we pick our battles.
Yep.
We, you know, and this is the one that we're not going to pick because the work or the vision or whatever we're going for is ultimately where we want to go and what we're driving towards. So we're going to hear it. We don't love this, but we're going to, you know, keep moving forward as a team. And I think, you know, I do think empathy is kind of like the really key critical thing for me and being able to make that work in those hard moments.
So you've got two big constituents that you're managing to, well, three, actually. You're managing up, you're managing down, and you're managing to a consumer.
All the time.
So for me, when you're wanting to do something like try something really bold on a menu, something you're certain that maybe a lot of people are going to reject, how hard is that to just run with it and do it? And what plays into a decision to maybe even cave at the end and take something off the menu?
I mean, so it's like one big thing that I've learned, and going back to like some of the skills that you were asking that I've gained through like my career that has helped me, you know, be better at what I do, is one thing that I've learned is I always look at comedians on how they talked, storytellers. They're really good storytellers, right? And one thing that I've learned about them is every day I get a chance to talk to my staff. We do lineup every day, and that means that we talk in front of them and we talk about how many reservations we have, what the day is going to look like. We do a little pre-shift, right? That's a little briefing of what the day is going to look like. And that's one opportunity that anytime we have a new dish that's going to go on the menu, that's my way of selling it to every single person that's going to walk in through those doors. Mm-hmm. So if I'm passionate about something, I'm not going to be the person that's talking to every single person that is eating at the table and selling them this tribe dish that I'm so excited about. That might not be super exciting for everybody to come in and eat. My best way of doing that is showing my passion of that dish through the staff at 4:30 at the dining room before everybody comes in. And I take those cues from comedians, stand-up artists that I've listened to, like, get the attention and do it in my own way, not like through telling jokes, but like how I get the cues on, like, storytelling, and sometimes, and that's okay.
So I'm curious, and this doesn't even have to be for this talk here, but I want to ask a question right now. Are you filming those stand-up talks that you are doing every day and posting them?
No,
we Like, if I could hear a chef impassioned, because just quick aside while we're in this, but like the thing that has helped Tibby so much was we used to fly to stores and we used to meet with the people and we used to give them a talk, and then you would leave and you would leave the store and you would have explained why a blazer was great, but then it would kind of fall out of their mind. And then I would come back and I would try and tell our internal salespeople why it's great, and production, why they should make more. Now that we have Instagram, and every time when I fall in love with something, I go on and I explain why it's great. The consumer, the vendor who's selling it, the internal sales team who has to sell it, the store team, they're all required to watch my Instagram at our stores. Mm. All of them are on message. Yeah. And so it feeds the system internally and externally. I would kill if I could go on and see a chef talking in a way that is not Fox MasterChef edited.
Totally.
Just
pumping up his team.
Normal.
Yes.
I would die for that, and I would click so hard to like go in and try it and see. I would kill for that. So
follow.
Just anyways.
Yeah. Yes.
I'll
Like,
I might do it.
I'll probably do it. I love it. Matt's like, I'll teach you how to set that up. And it really is someone standing us.
Gabe, like, I've been there a bunch of times.
I love that.
Love that.
For me, when have you felt the most at risk with your career choices? And how did you navigate all of the, and I'm going to assume you've had them, all of this, like, everything's going to end tomorrow type feelings? Or have you never had them?
Oh, yeah. I've definitely felt those feelings before. You know, thinking back, it's like, I always thought it was when we opened Suerte. And it really wasn't, because I was 28 when we opened Suerte. And it was scary, but I always, like, had this thing. It was like, if I fail at this, I can still make it by 35. I can still, like, get back on track and, like...
And how long has Suerte been around now?
It's going to be 7 years in March. Okay. The biggest fear was opening this restaurant and...
Opening Este,
yes, sorry. And Suerte was very lucky to get a lot of local and national recognition, because we were two people, my business partner, Sam Hellman Maz, myself, who were locally known as people that were, like, right hands to very successful chefs in the industry, local industry. So we didn't have, like, a lot of pressure of opening a successful restaurant. It was just a lot of heart and soul. We had a lot of passion, and people seemed to like that, and we were lucky enough to, like, get recognized for that.
And now you have expectations.
And then there was the expectation of what are they going to do next? Is it going to be as good? Is it going to be good enough?
Yeah.
And that was, for me, where I was like, I didn't doubt myself that it was going to be good, but it was like, at this point, I can't go back to, like, starting all over again.
Yep.
I mean, I could, you know, because I've gone through way harder things in life, but it wasn't as easy as when I was 28, where I was like, if I fail, I can just try again.
Yep.
this was like, I have a lot of stuff on the line, and it wasn't even just about me. It was like a lot of people that have been from day one at Suerte that have wanted to come and open this. Like, there was a lot more stuff writing on the wall, that it wasn't just about me. It was about a team of people that wanted to pursue this dream that I had, that were sharing it with me, that I was like, oh shit, did I do the right thing?
Yeah.
Is it too late to give up? I know I'm not going to give up, but am I doing the right thing? Is it still relevant? Is it still exciting, you know? And there's still moments where it's like, you know, opening a Mexican seafood restaurant in the middle of Texas is, it's not the easiest thing, yeah. right? But just like opening Suerte, like making your own tortillas by hand one at a time was not the easiest thing. It would be easier to buy them
yeah.
and sell them, probably for the same cost that we're selling you tortillas right now. But it's not the right thing. It's yeah. not what excites mm-hmm. me. So that's why we're doing it. And we just turned 2 in October here at Este.
Yep.
And I feel like it's getting there.
I would imagine that the authenticity part that we talked about earlier, and that willingness to discuss things that go wrong or mistakes mm-hmm. you make, or, you know, things that you're not an expert at yet. Like, for anyone who is looking to start something smaller and listening to this, I remember something that my boss at American Express told me when I was in sales at American Express, and he was like, when people like you, they will do everything to find a way to buy from you. And when they don't like you, even if you're great, they will constantly be seeking for your downfall and for when they cannot buy from you. And so I think when people are starting out small, like even having that opportunity to be like, okay, now we're trying something new. I hope to hell mm-hmm. it's as good as what we started out with. You know, like mm-hmm. people have venues now to be able to share that information, thanks to companies like Google and all, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
So for you, what, like, when you feel at risk, how, working in a large organization, how much can mitigate that risk? Like, because control's a big thing for me.
Yeah.
Huge.
I think in some ways, it's a little bit of what you're saying right now in terms of the rapport and the relationships that you have with the people around you is really going to be critical when you're in a moment of risk in a large company. Like, you know, if I make a really big mistake, or I'm in a moment of crisis, I need to be able to show up in a room with folks who are not going to like, you know, point fingers and say, okay, let's look at the problem in front of us. How are we going to solve it? And, you know, have a really good collaborative experience where we're constantly being really honest, where we're constantly sharing candid feedback, where we're constantly context sharing to be able to get the outcome that we need to go. But I think a lot of it is, maybe I would almost, I don't know if this is a fair analogy, I'm kind of my own little small business in mm-hmm. this large corporation.
Yep.
And so I think about, you know, my players are not other industry players, but they're other people in this specific business. And a lot of times I think that's, you know, the landscape that I'm navigating, that's a little bit different maybe than where you guys are. But the rapport and the relationship, that piece is still critical to being able to influence, solve problems, you know, and get to where you need to go from a risk perspective.
Well, and even in no matter how big of an industry or company that you're in, breaking things down and making your world smaller
yes.
is key, because absolutely. You really have to understand, because otherwise you feel like there's no way you can affect anything that you're doing. It can yes. become such a weight. But I'm curious with you, Fermin. One of the things that allows me to sleep at night now is I feel so much more in control, in that mm-hmm. if everything were to go out of control and in tomorrow, I feel like we've got the core there to pivot and do something different. Mm-hmm. But that didn't come until, yeah. you know, I was in business for 24 years before I felt that level of comfort. I don't think you need to be in business for 24 years to have gotten there, but that's how long it took me. But like, do you feel in control, or do you still feel like you're kind of riding the top of a wave, or what's your stress level in terms of?
I think I feel a little bit of both. Mm-hmm. I feel like sometimes I am in control. Sometimes I'm still learning how to let go, pass it on. And sometimes I'm still like figuring out how I'm feeling every day, yep. You know, and it's like, it's very up and down in a way that I'm enjoying very much.
Yep.
Because I still very much enjoy the roller coaster that this career and business and just like being a chef is all about. I still enjoy it very much.
Yep.
As confusing as like it sounds, I love it every day, and I wouldn't trade it for anything, because it is what I'm lucky enough to do, because prior to finding this, I didn't know what I wanted to do with my life. Mm-hmm. I didn't know, when everybody in my friend of groups was going to law school, was going to study to be a doctor, lawyers, architects, I was just going to college because I knew that was the right thing.
Yep.
And then I found this thing that I was very passionate in, and I happened to start it to be good at.
Yep.
Whenever I had bad days that I'm like, do I get it? Am I getting it there? I don't take for granted that 17, 18-year-old Fermin would be lucky to be where he is right now. And mm-hmm. that's mm-hmm. where I'm like, it's okay if I don't have that answer right now.
Yep.
Because I'm also like enjoying the process in this moment.
Yeah.
Of I want to get there.
Yep.
But I'm not rushing it right now as much as I felt like I wanted to get there.
Yep.
In past years. Because I feel like every time I've been in a position where I'm rushing to get to the next place, I always miss where I was mm-hmm. in the past. And I don't want to make that mistake right now.
That's so true.
I really enjoy the moment I'm in right now, rather than chasing the next part of my career and not enjoying the moment that I'm currently in. Because that's happened so many times.
Yeah.
Where I'm chasing the next part. Where I was a line cook, I always wanted to be a sous chef and manage people. And then I started managing people, and I was like, man, I just miss cooking food.
That's that sequential path that a lot of people put themselves on. And I tell people a lot to think of their life not in terms of a GPS system where you set your goal.
Yep.
And then you've got like all your, you want to really map out your right turns, your left turns, where the police are located, all that kind of stuff. If you really look at it as a compass,
yeah.
and you know generally where you want to land, then that kind of lets you meander along the way and see the things along the side of the road, or decide when you want to go off course, but you know generally where you're getting back to. But what took me a long time was to figure out that goal at the end wasn't to become a $300 million brand. Because when I really figured out what that goal at the end was for us on the compass, to become a $300 million brand would have been completely out of alignment with everything that was my goal, was to be surrounded by incredible people that inspire me. It was to be able to do creative things every day that I love. And it was to stay independent and to be able to make my own decisions. So how, I'm not going to be a $300 million clothing brand in order to get there. Mm-hmm. So for you, Cecilia, working in a large company, bigger goals that you set for yourself, that you work towards, that leave you like open and inspired.
I'm still really lucky that in my role, I'm very close to a creation process. Like mm-hmm. we are creating content, telling digital stories all the time. And being close to the work is really, really important to
yeah.
me. And I think as people get more senior sometimes in their careers, especially in corporations, it's really easy to say, that's execution now.
Yes.
I sit at a different level. You know, that's not where I want to be. But I find that where the pockets of really good work are being done in these large corporations and in a place like Google is where really senior folks are leaning in as close as they can to the work. And that's where we see a lot of our best projects, a lot mm-hmm. of our most powerful moments. So I try and stay, you know, really, really close to the work. That's what I find to be inspiring. That's what I find to be exciting. And then also having a team of people that I just trust. And, you know, we love coming to work every day and, you know, being part on this creation journey together. That's one of the most inspiring things for me. You know, I start almost every day with a call to my executive creative director. And we just talk about, like, what's going to happen for the with the work that day. You know, what's our vision for where things are going to go? And it's those types of that's maybe how I'm creating control for myself in a place where there's so many things happening around me. But we have the opportunity to influence the team and the work that we're creating, and exerting that as much as possible is, I think, one of the things, it's what gets me inspired and gets me out of bed every day with our teams.
So any assistants around you that want to protect you by, like, not having you have to deal with all the shit, like, that's not a good thing.
No, I want it all. I want, you know, I want every single piece of it. And I want my team, anytime my team is trying to protect me from some hard conversation that's happening somewhere else, you know, I often say to them, you think it's a sign of seniority to be able to come to me and say, I solved it.
Yes.
Right? Like, it's all fixed. But I see the sign of competence and commitment when you come to me and you say, I've got a really hard problem.
Yeah.
And I'd love for you to dig in with me on this. And someone's ability to trust and not come and say, I've got all the answers, but, like, let's work this through together. I think that's often when we get to the best outcomes as a team. That's when we get to the best work. And that builds the types of relationships you need in a large company. The people you know you can trust, the people you know are aligned with your values, to really land where, you know, what you're working on or your project.
And so for me, you must find that in your world, like, if someone, I'm making this up, right? And this definitely coming from someone who can't cook, as my son will agree. But if they're missing two ingredients, sometimes the solution is not to find the strangest or the most, you know, be able to, like, recommend a place to go get those exact ingredients and it's far away and come up with the logistics of getting it here. Sometimes the solution is to say, all right, this is what we have to work with. Let's create something new that we never would have thought of. And that, for me, in my world, that's where the best things happen. When my factories try and pre-solve something unbelievably and they don't let me know about it, when they hand it to me, sometimes I'm like, shit, I love what happened here. Like, I wish we'd gone with this. Like, you didn't need to do it exactly as it was supposed to be, because sometimes you can really be surprised by the outcome.
Yeah. Yes. Well, one of the biggest things that I've learned, you know, it's like, I think for me, it's with having multiple restaurants and kitchens, you know, every day for us at 5 o'clock, and sometimes on the weekends earlier, it's showtime, right? Every day it's showtime at 5 o'clock because we have people that are coming to the restaurants every day. And the reality is that I can't be everywhere at once, right?
Yeah.
You know, people always ask me, you know, who's cooking when you're not there? And I always tell them, it's like the same people that cook there when I'm there, you
right.
know, when I'm not,
yeah.
it's the same people. And the thing that I've learned the most when I was like, I'm not going to be able to be everywhere at once.
Yeah.
The thing that I try to teach, especially my key leaders at every restaurant, is to try to have the same logic or common sense that I would have in every situation that would arise when we don't have a certain ingredient, when this person didn't show up, right? Like, to have the same common sense or logic problem solving that I would have, so that when that problem arises and I'm out of town or I'm not here, they come to me as like, hey, this is what I'm thinking. Like, would you do this? And then eventually, I just put in the notes, hey, this happened, this is what we did. And I was like, yeah, that's what I would have done. Or like, maybe like, that's actually not what I would have done, but that's better than what I would have come up with.
Yeah.
You know, and that's...
Or it's just different.
Yeah.
And that's interesting.
And that's also what I love about my role now. It's like mentoring the people that are coming up for the next generation of chefs to come up, because that's also now what I see part of my role as a chef is like fostering the next people that are going to keep coming up and mentoring the next role of chefs in this industry. And I take granted at all.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's great.
Absolutely.
Cecilia, you are navigating a big company here. So how do you measure taking risks? Like, when do you decide that you're really willing to put everything on the line? And in your world, is there even such a thing as putting everything on the line? Or
that's a really good question. I mean, I would guess that putting everything on the line looks different. Like, what the line is might be different for me than, yeah, you know, a small business owner starting something new. But I think for me, risk is really actually comes back to principles, what we were, yeah, talking about earlier. It comes back to principles. It comes back to values. You know, what am I optimizing for in my career or for the work in a particular moment? And it's kind of that juice worth the squeeze. Like, mm-hmm, will this get me close enough to that vision?
Yeah.
And then, yes, I'm happy to jump in. It always makes it easier when you have a boss or a, you know, a leader who says, I've got your back. That makes it, I think if you're leading a team, the best thing you can do is say to your team, I've got your back, yeah, because that will give them the space to take those risks. Take risks, fail fast, all of those things. But for me, in the end, it really is, you know, a team has limited energy, mm-hmm, to your point of 100 hours, but really you're only good for 50. Like, you have to recognize that about your team. So it's like, will this risk get us closer to where we want to be? And then it's totally worth taking. If it's going to spin people for multiple weeks, and who knows where we'll, and maybe we might not be getting the best out of the team.
Would you say when you were younger that you were a risk taker?
Yeah, I would say I was a risk. It might not look like a risk taker, but for me, you know, I grew up in Dallas. I moved to Austin for school.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for me, whenever I went and started working for Google in early 2007, 2008, that was a risk in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
I had just decided in my head, like, this is what I wanted to do, which was kind of weird at that moment. There was not tons of kids
to know with certainty.
Yeah. With how much certainty that this is where I wanted to go. And it was like a 20 interview process. It was moving to San Francisco. It was, you know, all of these things. But I wanted it. And it,
yes,
was that value. It was that vision. It was that principle. That is what I wanted. And so I jumped and I did it. And it was such a great experience. I can't say that enough. I think similarly, I went to a startup after my first 5 or 6 years at Google, and I just wanted to build something.
Yep.
I just wanted to build something from the ground up. That was my goal. And so whatever risk, you know, whatever was going to happen to that business didn't matter, because what I wanted was to be part of something small and to be part of growing something. And so in that case, the risk is totally worth it, because I, you know, had that opportunity and I learned, my growth curve was huge in that moment.
I think a lot about one of my favorite books, Matt, you have to read this, is Malcolm Gladwell's Outliers,
mm-hmm,
because I love the notion of, like, really dialing back to certain commonalities, things that have happened that tends to create consistent behaviors amongst large groups of people. And so I would think, like, in the corporate world, just being, you know, you're in San Francisco, your employees who have moved out of their small hometowns, that have moved across the world, your employee base, by definition of, they're almost like the early immigrants, right? Like, by definition, they are big risk takers. And so you, like, just, and what, I mean, obviously you're a risk taker, right? You, like, what was your, like, I don't have to ask if you were always a risk taker, because you were, but what was your path to wanting to, like, did you just always know that you were going to do big things?
I always wanted to go, I always went against the grain.
Yeah.
I never felt like I wanted to follow where everybody was going, because I never felt comfortable following that route where, like, I never saw myself, like, going in that route where, like, this is the status quo of what you have to do. I always felt like it was, like, something not for me.
Mm-hmm.
Not in the way that, like, I hated it. It's just, like, I didn't feel comfortable,
yep,
in those things. So I always wanted to look what was else out there.
Yeah.
I wanted to see all my options.
Yep.
I wanted to experience what else was out there in the way that made me feel excited about what I wanted to do, because to me it always felt crazy that you're supposed to make these big decisions in life when you're just turning 18.
Right.
I didn't understand that, and I felt like, why is everybody okay with this?
Yep.
Like,
yep.
Why is everybody like saying, yeah, let's do this, and I'm the only one that's like not. I'm the only one that's like, well, let's wait.
Yep.
That felt awkward to me.
Yep.
But it inside of me it felt right.
Yep.
And I'm glad I went with that. But not like now I can say that. In the moment it feels scary.
Yeah.
In the moment, like I said, it was like I saw everybody very dedicated to the route that they were going, and I felt lost in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
But it felt right to me to not follow those things. And now I'm still friends with those people that I grew up with, and they talk to me and they look at me like, man, I wish I would have like followed that gut that I had,
yep,
of wanting to be a photographer,
yep,
of wanting to pursue my painting career.
Yep.
Right. And they're happy. They're engineers, right? But they didn't follow that gut that I feel like we all have.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But we don't all follow it because of the status quo or whatever society tells us that we have to do. And I think that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the person I wanted to be as a risk taker, of just like, maybe if everybody goes right, you don't have to go right. You can take a left.
Mm-hmm. Yep. No, I think that kind of risk taking, for me growing up in the South, small island and everything, it was something that I was just propelled to do. And you do it, and it's kind of like one step in front of the other. But at some point, you can kind of stop and take stock and say, you know what, maybe this is a core skill set I have, mm-hmm, that is making me more successful by my own measurement than maybe other people feel.
Okay, you guys are good to go, and it's a fucking wonderful conversation. Excuse my French.
Well, just a side note here, and again, this may not make it in because controversy wise, but as these companies really lean on work from home and meeting employees where they are, mm-hmm, you may really start, if you're a company that is predicated on hiring people who are big risk takers, narrowing that funnel of risk takers who were normally coming into your company.
Yeah.
Like, yep, you know, it might be fine that someone's in St. Simons Island, Georgia, and wants to work from home, but they may not be, by Malcolm Gladwell's terms of outliers, the ones who might be contributing the next big idea. Yeah. Not to say that they can't, but statistically totally. Speaking.
Totally. I find that to be something I think about a lot, because I think something that was so true to my, as you said, my risk taking was like, okay, I'm going to move to California. I don't know anyone there. It was a big risk for me, but then, you know, it was also a big risk for me was to move back to Austin.
Yeah.
Which was an interesting, like,
yes,
because I'm not close to the heat anymore, the action. I can't just walk to my boss's office and have a quick conversation and a lot of that rapport building stuff that is so critical. But I also find that it gives me such a different perspective from everyone else on my team. And when everyone else shows up with a very San Francisco, guy next to me works for Meta, guy on the other side of me works for, you know, OpenAI, I'm like, well, I'm sitting next to a teacher and a chef, or, you know, people with really different skill sets. And I think, it is very interesting how that will evolve for people over time. But I think, again, it's paid off, because I can come into a room with a confidence about a diverse set of perspectives that maybe I didn't have when I was living in San Francisco, which is a beautiful place, but also it can be a bubble for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, because that diversity of perspective is so, I mean, it's so key. And for you, for me, like, how key is it in the restaurant industry? Is it key? Because, like, clearly, like, you've got to be very maniacal about your point of view and the actual product that you're making. But I would imagine that in the selling of your product, you know, being able to understand how someone who might not think exactly as you do as a chef, like you have a cookbook coming out, yeah. right? So clearly for a cookbook, you're going to be talking to a very broad range of people. Like, you've got to have a lot of different considerations in your head now, just in the preparation of that, I would think. Like, how do you gain those perspectives that need to augment what you bring to the table?
I think just with experiences like that, right? Like mm-hmm. writing the cookbook and also being involved with the people that come to the restaurant. You know, I think restaurants are very unique, right? The moment you walk into the restaurant, you're pretty much committed to spending even a little bit of money.
Yeah.
You know, when maybe you go into a retail store, you might not necessarily leave.
You haven't committed,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, you haven't committed. Like, at the restaurant, you're committed. So, to me, that's a privilege, mm-hmm. right? The moment you walk in, like, I'm going to try to get as much information as I can from you, and not just you, but, like, everybody that comes in, so I can gather information of how do I get more people to come in? How do I get, okay, what are people liking? What are people not liking? Because also I know that those people are going to tell more people
yep.
to come in, right? Like, that is the hard and easy thing about restaurants. It's like, if you do a good job, most likely those people will tell other people.
Yep.
And on the opposite end, if you don't do a good job, those people will tell other people.
Yep.
Right? And, like, in restaurants, that's kind of like how you win.
Yeah.
By doing a good job one day at a time, one table at a time, one plate at a time. And that's why it's so important. And then you have the other part of, you know, if you get accolades, mm-hmm. if you are mentioned in a local or national publication, then people come in with that expectation that someone else wrote about you from that one time they had dinner.
Yep. Yes.
Yeah. And, you know, as opposed to, like, when somebody reviews a movie, everybody sees the same movie
yep.
that you get to go to the movie theater.
Correct.
When There's somebody no, reviews yep. a restaurant, yeah. they come in a different time of the year. The menu might be different.
Yes.
You know, the person they came, the reviewer might have come with just one person.
Yeah.
You might come with four people. You might come with just yourself at the bar.
Yeah.
Right? You might order different. Like, it's a completely different thing that everybody experiences, completely different. So it's like we're constantly getting information on how to be better and how to make sure that ultimately the restaurant is a business.
Well, right? It's interesting, this conversation, because I asked Matt last night at dinner, I said, what is one of the biggest things that you've learned just in your young career so far? And his answer surprised me, but I think it's really apropos here. He said that he's learned that corporations are people, that they're actually just bundles of people. And I think that is what is so key for, you know, if in terms of storytelling, you can also get people to really understand that you are people. And just the way you described food yeah. and that it will be different and you will, like, and it's made up by people. So that's no surprise. And I think bringing that human level to the forefront and getting people to embrace the friction of that,
yes.
to know that, like, sometimes something might be made with too much sugar, too much salt, whatever, but that there are people behind it. So it's also a matter of how these people deal with things.
And if you tell us when you're in this building, I promise you we'll do our best to make it better.
Yeah.
When it gets hard is when you leave the building and then you don't tell us that we didn't do it right. And then you don't give us a chance. Address the situation with,
totally
oh my
different.
God, we're so sorry.
Yeah.
We can fix it. Like, would you go back to
totally
the restaurant?
Totally different. Yep.
Yeah. Because we're humans.
Exactly. This is the point of just being human and in conversations. And my husband and I were talking about some of the questions last night. We were talking about principles and
yeah.
values. And one of the things for our family that we talk about a lot is assuming best intentions.
Yes.
And just showing up. I think that's part of, you know, this process. It's part of life experiences, but it's part of work. It's just assuming that the person across from you has the best intention.
Yeah.
And that is the way to not have someone chasing you out of a restaurant saying,
yes,
right. It's assuming that you as the customer have had a very true and valid experience. And
because best intentions allow your shoulders to relax. It's
exactly.
funny because we just hired someone, and he was having a thing with a, you know, he was dealing with a situation. He said, I know I should assume they're right, because you say always assume that they have positive intent. And I was like, no, positive intent doesn't make that person right.
No.
Positive intent releases a situation so that you can really uncover what the problem
exactly.
is and get to it, instead of assuming that they're out to get a free meal, they're
exactly.
out to provoke you. And so I think this goes back to one of the things you said earlier, Cecilia, when you were like, it's really important to stay in the nitty gritty of things and still be able to rise above it. But you've got to be out there in the nitty gritty with your ear to the floor.
Yes.
And you, for me, and what you were talking about, getting out there, talking to the customers. And so this is where, you know, those skill sets that people have, that person who is kind of the social butterfly, or the person who really does ask a lot of questions, that is a real skill set. You know, when I was growing up, I always needed to be convinced why I had to do something. And I was always like, but why? But, and why this, why that? And my teachers were always like, you ask too many questions, go to the back of the room. But I was really curious. And that curiosity and getting people out on the restaurant floor to see their faces, or making sure that you're involved in the grit,
yeah.
like that's a skill set that you need.
Yes, yes.
In people. And if you've got that, that is applicable in different fields that you want to play in, whether they're super big or smaller. And
yeah, absolutely.
If you, Cecilia,
yeah.
if you were to choose a totally different career to be in, where do you think your skill set would be transferable? And in your wildest dreams, what would it be?
Oh, this is a really good question. It would have to be, again, for me, connecting with people and being part of a creative process with
mm-hmm.
people is... something that is really important to me. Like, that is what gives me energy. That's what energizes a creative process. So anything that would, like, I would probably be terrible at working in a restaurant, but I would say that the fact that you get to be with this group of creative people working towards, like, some vision of what the food's going to be like, what the experience is going to be like, I feel so envious of that, because that feels like such a cool experience. So I think I've often found, for me, like, so much about it is connection, that is, as long as I'm part of a great team, I think it could be amazing. I think, you know, someone might say, I would love to open a flower shop. That feels very like one person, you're, you know, owning a flower shop. But something with like with a big group of people, like a restaurant or something like that, I would love to have that experience.
Which I think that is so key, though, the way that you answered that, because I find that most people, whether they are the 50-year-old who feels locked in their job, or the 20-year-old that is wondering what I'm going to be doing for a living, when Matt said earlier that these corporations are just people, industries are just people,
mm-hmm.
the actual job that you do at the end of the day is contingent upon people.
Mm-hmm.
So when you realize that, you know, I am so passionate about the way that your jeans fit, the way that your shirt fits. But I was oddly just as passionate about creating an ad for Shoney's Restaurant
yep.
as I was about getting someone to accept the American Express card in their restaurant. Like, the teams around me, the people, that like what you bring to the table, it's so within yourself to
yep.
pull that together and apply it to
Absolutely.
Anything that you're doing. And that's why this dialing back to like your own skill sets and your principles and what are these non-negotiables for you is key, because there is just about anything that you could be doing.
Yes.
If you apply yourself and you have passion yourself rather than passion for the jean shirt.
Yes.
It's just like passion.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what if you were not doing what you're doing, for me, what would be?
I would be pursuing film.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would love to be.
I would watch this movie.
Yeah. I think what I love about cooking in the way that I would like pursue film is I love to take what's in my brain and put it out there.
Mm-hmm.
I think food does that for me in a way that's like I get to take what's inside my brain and put it on a plate.
Yep.
I think.
I love that.
I love that. And there are so many more opportunities for that kind of stuff now.
Yes.
Where just think like 10 years ago.
Had iPhones been around when I was like 17, 18, I probably would have not been a chef.
Yeah.
I would have chosen that path.
Interesting. It was funny. I was watching like a way old thing of Flight of the Conchords. I don't know if you guys ever.
Yeah.
My favorite. It's actually one of Amy Gravitz's shows from HBO, but like always been my favorite. And there's this scene where like they're making a movie and then they pull out their flip phone to film it. But this was back in the day where that was actually a very comedic scene because you're like, no one would pull out a flip phone to like film a movie. But now you're like, you really can do anything. Whatever you want right now. You just may not, this is a stealing a line from Amy Gravitz from HBO. She's like, you can be as creative as you want to be. You just may not have a right to the salary, to the dollar amount that you think should be afforded to you for doing it.
Yep.
Those are good words to end on. Yeah, I love that.
I love that.
All right.
To my day.
Ciao. That was good.